You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Sorry, was that to Jack? Am I just interrupted?
It was to whoever wanted it. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the stony silence then. I mean, cheers, guys.
Yeah, I thought you were going to carry on.
I thought you carried on.
Yeah, sorry, I stopped myself, didn't I? Because I thought I'd interrupted. I ended up interrupting myself. So, yeah.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Two tricky matches successfully negotiated by Manchester City this week, but it's a pair of games where the opposition have had more of the ball, even if City were more creative. Is that part of the new look Pep Guardiola model, where the team is more direct and happy to counter-attack, or is it a temporary solution that's currently getting results? We'll discuss the wins over Bournemouth and Borussia Dortmund on today's Blue Moon podcast, plus we'll take a look at how this seemingly new approach might look as Liverpool come to the Etihad. Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap will also be on the show to talk about their recent downturn and the even more recent upturn in results. And with the big game this weekend, and as the November international break creeps ever closer, we'll take a look at how City are shaping up this season against their top of the table rivals. I'm David Mooney, and with me causing mischief this week, we've got City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello.
And from the Daily Mail, Jack Gorm.
Hello. Higgy's causing mischief this week.
I kind of described you both as causing mischief, but I realised how that sounds. It sounds like it's Higgy causing mischief and you're just here with us.
Oh, right. No, it did very much sound like it was Higgy causing mischief, which would be correct, normally.
I meant that you were both causing mischief, basically. But
I don't know what you've heard. Like, I mean, I have. I just thought I'd cover my tracks adequately, that's all.
This is an award-winning pairing, isn't it?
Is it? I think the last pairing before we won the award, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't it used? Wasn't it used in the?
Was it?
Was it?
Yeah, I don't. I didn't know that.
Maybe they listened to that one and went, "Well, we can't not give it to these two." I remember it being a particularly unhinged episode before that. But then I thought I'd get the band back together, see what happens.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to start with this because a fan got a selfie with Phil Foden after the opening goal against Dortmund. Have either of you two got selfies with famous people? Have you been lucky enough to go, you know what, can I just have a selfie? Jack, have you done that?
It's not a selfie, it's a picture. I'm trying to think if I've got that. I might only have one of a famouser.
Because you don't strike me as the sort of person that would ask somebody for a selfie. Do you know what I mean? I think you're too cool for that.
Not really my style. It was on. So the Champions League final where Real Madrid beat Atletico in Lisbon. My dad won us tickets to go to that final with Heineken. He doesn't drink Heineken. My mum wanted Heineken once, and then he'd like bought him at Tesco and like swiped his club card, and ended up entering him unwittingly for competition, which he then won.
He accidentally won a competition. Yes, he didn't know he'd entered. Amazing.
They like rang him up, and it was this classic like, oh, is this a wind up sort of thing? And they went, oh no, you've got like a 2-day stay in Lisbon on us with travel, and there'll be a Heineken guest with us. During the weekend. So anyway, we go to Stansted Airport into like the private terminal, ready to take a private jet out to Lisbon. I was like, this is quite good.
Was it covered in like Heineken livery?
Yes, it was, for the morning.
Pilot was drunk on the stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Pilot was hammered.
Anyway, so we're like, we're in this terminal, so, and there's a couple of other like competition winners. So we're like having a chat with them and whatever. And the like, I was expecting it to be like Rude Hullet or someone of that ilk, of like a proper Heineken ambassador. And anyway, the guy walked through the doors. Well, first of all, Mike Pickering walked through the doors. And my dad was like, oh, that's Mike Pickering. Who, yeah.
The guy. And then, oh, sorry, I was thinking of Ronnie Pickering.
And then no, obviously. No,
no. Sorry, two very different ends of the scale of Pickerings there.
And obviously, after, there's only one person who can really walk in after Mike Pickering if you're around football, and it's Noel Gallagher. So Noel Gallagher spent the weekend with us. We didn't think he would be around for the whole weekend. We thought he'd just like take the flight and then do his own thing. Whereas actually he'd like stayed and had a couple of drinks with people on the Friday night and then was with us during the game. But I didn't think he would be. So my dad was like, while we were on the flight, he was like, oh, you get a picture with him. You're going to have to get a picture with him. And obviously this was before, you know, I think I was about 22, 23, before I'd even like done any city at all. I certainly wouldn't ask him now. Anyway, so I sort of, he'd gone to the toilet and then was walking back through the cabin. And I was like, oh, sorry, would you mind? Anyway, so he's draped over the seat with me. And actually the picture, which is a horrific picture of me, is really, really bad. It looks like Gallagher has asked me for it. The way that like, he's positioned, it's really...
You're like looking at him saying, would you stop bothering me?
And then, yeah, so that was... And then the only thing... the only thing he really wanted to talk about all weekend was like Uwe Rosler and things like that. So, so sorry, that was a really long-winded story, but quite funny.
I've had a picture with Noel Gallagher. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. Fair play, Higgy. I'm worried now that well, you can't.
If you
beat
think that
story.
Was a good story, well, I hope you're sitting down. Yeah, I've not got anything to match that. I'm a bit annoyed that you said you thought Jack might be too cool to ask people for.
Oh, I think you are as well.
Well, you didn't
wrong.
Say that, did you? By I was kind of inferring that I'm not that cool and would desperately throw myself upon any celebrity nearby just to try and get a photo with him, which I don't do. So, no, I've not got anything to offer. But I'm quite jealous of that. Sounds absolutely amazing. Just chatting about Uwe Rosler with Noel Gallagher on loads of free Heineken.
Yeah, you need to enter more competitions that you didn't know you'd entered.
I do.
That'd do
yeah,
it was
the whole experience was bizarre, really. It was very... Very strange, and also the plane, the private plane that took over. There must have been less than 25 people on it, but it was a full like the size of a normal aircraft.
Wow!
So there's like rows and rows of empty seats.
Carbon footprint there, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Very.
Hope you feel bad about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think people win those competitions, do you? Just think it's a blag, but people win them without even knowing they're in them.
Yeah, what's that house? I was going to say Timu house, Amaze, but not, obviously not Timu because that'd be the worst house you've ever seen. But it's the Amaze house. Like nobody ever wins that, and apparently then they do. Let's talk about the football. Actually, kicking and screaming back to the reason why people are actually listening to this. In both of these games, Higgy, it's been a bit weird because City have had less possession than their opponent in both Bournemouth and the Dortmund games, but in both of them. City were more dangerous, and it felt like the opposition couldn't really create anything despite that possession. So, like, where are you feeling about this kind of brave new world that we're entering?
I think it's an example of Pep being willing to be pragmatic and evolve. We can't, you know, the model that we've had where it's just purely mainly possession based and. Just passing teams to death. You can't sustain the same approach forever and ever because everyone else is looking at it and trying to unpick how to combat it. You might call
and
it
everyone else has got better
our agenda.
As well. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But yeah, with teams like Bournemouth, I mean, we kind of played them at their own game. The pitch was like weirdly narrow. Like Doku was coming inside. He was central midfield a lot of the time. Like the way that they tucked in just to go kind of. Not necessarily man on man, but just compact that space and make it more combative in the middle there. And yeah, if that means, I don't think it's an intentional thing to surrender possession. But if that's a consequence of the way we're setting up and other teams aren't particularly creating much with it, then yeah, we'll happily take less of a massive possession stat and just keep hitting teams on the counter a bit more and be a bit more transitional. It seems to be working, although we are giving up a few chances as well.
It didn't feel like Bournemouth and Dortmund had more of the ball, did it?
It just felt more even. I mean, previously, it's so blatantly obvious that we've had the ball for 10 minutes and they've not touched it. And you can see them psychologically wilt just under the sustained, not had a touch for, 15 minutes of the game kind of attitude on the other team. But yeah, it's a bit more even without necessarily looking like we've had less, even though we have. I don't know. Yeah, please explain.
The thing is, though, Jack, like, as much as you ask Guardiola, he won't want to concede possession, as Higgy says. He'll want the ball and he'll want to force teams like Bournemouth and Dortmund back into their own area. But if City can no longer do it as well as they used to be able to, and they're better at coping with teams having the ball, does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. But he says the best way to defend is by having the ball. So I guess it matters in that sense, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know. I particularly the last two games, I didn't really get the sense that they were sort of chasing the ball or anything like that. I didn't think like. So what were the actual percentages?
It's basically 50-50 on both. It was 52-48 in the Bournemouth game and 51-49 in
the Bournemouth. I mean, the Bournemouth thing's weird because Bournemouth are great. I despise the word transition, but.
Sorry, let me just scrub that out of my notes then. Just one
sadly, sadly, that is. You are doing as well. I can just see that. That's what they're good at, and you don't necessarily want or need the ball for that. So it's surprising that they would have the majority, albeit a small majority, a Brexit majority of the ball. I also think that City have always had the capability of being a really, really good counter-attacking team.
Transitional team,
They've always had, really, really, like, proper players over a distance. Like, even, I know that Guardiola said for years, that's not us, that's not our game, we're all about the small little passes, but they are, like, these players, over the last 10 years, have been better than everyone else in the Premier League. So, therefore, if you ask them to play over the top, then they would have scored so many. I mean, look at the Centurion season. How many goals did like they scored from like fast breaks and things like that? But they've just not been allowed to do it.
One of the best goals I've ever seen at Villa as well, Bernardo.
Was part of the point though, Jack, that the space wasn't there to exploit that because the opposition weren't coming up the pitch. Whereas now they are coming up the pitch a bit, so they can exploit it.
Yeah, I mean that's it's because the game sort of. The game sort of changed, or the ideal of the game sort of changed, in that teams want to be like Bournemouth and go and like press high up the pitch and all that sort of stuff. Whereas like it was in vogue 5 years ago, well, 2 years ago, to sit in and counter from your own
goal line,
22.
Yeah.
Whereas now you're countering from the other team's 22, aren't you? So it's sort of the game changing that aspect. But I think if City had been allowed to play on the counter or transition or whatever over the years, did he score 100 goals a season in the league comfortably every single year? Because the forwards have always been exceptional. It's just they haven't been allowed to do it and they've had to find different ways of scoring goals.
Yeah, and when you look at the goals that City scored against Bournemouth in particular, Higgy, there was so much on the counter there. They're also kind of, they're generating these transitions by inviting the pressure themselves. And you look at the way they drew Bournemouth up the pitch, and then it's a couple of quick passes, one up to Cherky's head. And yes, like he's basically headed it into the space. And I know Haaland started his run kind of 5 yards into his own half, but suddenly he's clean through. And like that's not a goal City could have scored a couple of years ago because the other team would not have been as high up the pitch.
Well, no. And I think, also, adapting to Haaland a bit more specifically, being a bit more Haaland bespoke, is helpful to that. I mean, weirdly, it's kind of married to him being more involved deeper as well. And
exactly, yeah. It's exactly that.
Yeah. So people have accused him in the past of not being good in the build-up play and us not being direct enough. And yeah, I mean, Pep, if nothing else, is willing to learn and evolve, isn't he? So I think that's what we're seeing.
Higgy's completely right, because you look at that, the goal against Bournemouth with the cherky header. Like, the only reason he has the run on the Bournemouth players to get onto the end of that header is because he's come deep and been part of that link. And then it just gives him the space to be able to eat up the ground. Whereas if you're on the...
So if you can get him in a foot race with anyone from his own arm.
And if you're playing on the last man, you've not... all right, he'd still beat most people if the ball was played over the top anyway. But he's given himself an extra few yards to sort of get himself going, go through the gears. And then by the time the ball has actually like gone beyond the defensive line, he's nearing top speed already. So that's why he like flew away.
Yeah. And he's in, yeah. Mm. He did a nice little Sean Wright Phillips header as well to keep control of that ball as well, Higgy. I don't know if you saw that as it's played over the top. He just nods it down for himself. It was a staple of the Sean Wright Phillips run.
I had a nice view of it actually, because when it got flicked, the second one.
The opening goal, where Cherky heads it through, because the ball's bouncing, he basically heads it down to himself.
Yeah, just sort of runs at it and lets it hit him in the face kind of thing.
Yeah. Are you getting the inevitable feeling back with Haaland?
Yeah, I mean, the only issue is that you know he's not going to... Well, I'm going against my answer of yes in terms of it being inevitable. Almost. It's almost... Nothing's 100%. So that's the problem, isn't it? You think it's inevitable, so you rely on it too much, and then he misses one and you only get one chance a game and you lose to Villa. So as inevitable as it can feel, you know, the sensible side of things says that you can't rely on it being inevitable. So we do need to, as we are doing, to other people to chip in a little bit.
Funny past week, because after Villa, like, heads were falling off left, right and centre. Well, I didn't think they were brilliant at Villa, but I didn't think they were that bad.
They were all right, weren't they? Steady.
They were okay. Like, they had enough chances to sort of get something out of the game. But there was like, God, it was... I'd written a piece like saying they weren't that bad. And then like some of the people coming back going, "Are you spewing bullshit for the club?" Like, I was like, the club have rang me mid-game and said, "Would you mind saying we were great?
If we lose this, yeah."
It's fascinating, because then after winning against Bournemouth and after winning against, I mean, all the stuff last on Wednesday night after Dortmund was like, they've been brilliant, whatever. So, well, actually, for 20 minutes, it had a bit of a Feyenoord feel about it. Mm-hmm. And if Donnarumma wasn't, you know, if it wasn't Donnarumma in net, that could become quite a tricky night. So it's just interesting, the sort of like polar opposite kind of reactions to two games where, I didn't think they were as bad as people were saying at Villa. I didn't think they were quite as good as people were saying against Dortmund.
I think people are becoming more, if it's possible, people are becoming increasingly immediate and reactionary, like, as time goes on with football. I mean, I remember a time where you wouldn't even been looking at the league table, you know, in October, because it's like, well, it's only a few games, who cares? And now it's like, oh, we're three games in and look who's top of the league. It's, oh, this is mental, write something quick. And everyone loses their minds.
Do I just need to scrub out that bit of the notes where we talk about the position in the league?
We're safe.
It's very serious in November, mate. Don't worry about that.
You scrub that out.
We'll come to that. We'll come to that in a minute. Higgy, you said you wouldn't want to get in a foot race with Haaland. What type of race would you like to get in with him? What do you think you would beat him in?
Did I say I wouldn't like to get in a foot race with him? I don't recall saying that. I think I...
Something could... along those lines, anyway. Tenuous enough for me to ask you what sort of race you'd like to run against him. Egg and spoon?
Bob's no, leg? I think he'd be really good at that. I'm just thinking of things I can do really quickly. I can eat Weetabix really quickly. I've got a method.
With what sort of milk?
You wouldn't want to go in an eating race against Haaland, though, surely, would you?
No, true. He'd just eat the plate, wouldn't he? And swallow it like an ostrich. I know that I have Weetabix on a plate. No, I can't really think of a race that he would lose.
That you would beat him in.
To me. You've put me on the spot there. This wasn't in the notes. And I didn't say it.
Are you the swimmer?
I don't have limbs like oars, as does Erling Haaland. So, you know, I reckon he'd probably be quite good at that as well.
Yeah, probably. Mm. Yeah. In fact, actually, could I have picked a worse discipline than swimming?
A race that involves going in small spaces and ducking through holes that are generally smaller than the frame of Erling Haaland would probably be my only option there.
Yeah, but you're a tall man yourself, though. So, like,
I know, but I think I'm, I'm allowed to say that I don't think I'm quite as built as Erling Haaland.
As Erling Haaland, yeah, that's fair.
Just about.
What was that show on Channel 5 in the 90s with Melinda Messenger?
Fort Boyard.
Yeah, that was that.
Was that
like
Fort
small,
Boyard?
Small
didn't have that,
spacing
Dirty
sort of thing.
Den on it as well.
Yeah, I think so. That you had to do a bit of small spaces in there that you might struggle with.
Yeah, there used to be one where they used to have to get keys, didn't you? And they used to lob one out into the ocean, and somebody had to go and swim for it. It was like a mile swim and back. Yeah,
I think that might have been it.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I
so you'd
be
like to
that.
Take him on at Fort Boyard? I didn't expect Fort Boyard to come up in today's show, but here we are. This is a paid promotion for NordVPN. Now, the international break is coming up, so while all of the players jet off to their national teams after this weekend's game with Liverpool, it might be that time that you're getting away from everything and taking a break yourself. Now, if you want to stay protected when using your devices abroad or at home, or you want to stream things on your paid subscriptions from back home while you're away, then you'll need a VPN. A VPN changes your virtual location, making it appear like your device is in another country, meaning you can stream TV shows or films that aren't available where you are. With NordVPN, you can connect to more than 8,400 servers across 127 countries, and you can do it in just one click or zero clicks if you turn on Auto Connect. Now, I often use NordVPN for working on the podcast as well. There are many times when I've needed to connect to a public Wi-Fi spot in a coffee shop, hotel, or motorway services in order to do an interview or record a voiceover with a guest when making a feature, that sort of thing. And NordVPN means that I can do it safely, keeping my passwords protected and my data secure. It's easy to do, you just open the app and then it's one click to choose your server. Now, I'm an Apple user, so I use it on macOS and iOS, but it also works across every other major platform as well, so Windows, Android, Linux, and even your Android TV. One subscription can be used on up to 10 devices. I've got it on my laptop and my phone, and you're protected from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. It's premium cybersecurity for the price of a cup of coffee per month. To get the best discounts off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan, and there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is also in the podcast episode description.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
Jack, you spotted this, and you mentioned it online this week. 18 offsides for Haaland in his entire City career.
That was wrong, mate.
Oh, was it wrong?
Yeah, I was wrong.
Ah, well, okay, well, never mind. Still,
like,
how many
journo,
was it?
Journo research, terrible. It was 18 in the Premier League.
Ah, okay. Well, still, 18 in the Premier League in what, 3.5 years? Pretty damn good.
It's pretty
Jesus
damn good.
Had one of those that many in one game. So
Marmoush as well.
Oh, he loves an offside, doesn't he?
Yeah,
really does.
Yeah.
There was a moment against Dortmund where Cherki didn't play the ball through to Haaland as he was running through, and he delayed it and then played it. And I thought Haaland's going to be furious about this because he's going to end up getting caught offside. And still, he was onside when it got through to him after the delay.
We said, I mean, in that press conference the other day, he said a really interesting thing about VAR. Actually, he was like, "I quite like VAR because I'm always onside, so the like marginal calls will always go in my favour." I think he's the only professional footballer I've heard say like VAR's positive.
Mm.
I just find it like, and it's quite like, I don't know, quite interesting that he's thought about it and kind of mentioned it really. But I mean, that was always when he joined from Dortmund, that loads of people in Germany said like, this guy's just never ever offside. And he went into quite a little bit of detail on it on Tuesday when he was in front of the media, where he said he'd been working on like perfecting his runs since he was like 13 at Brunner. And I think when he says that, he actually means it. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that like, a lot of work's gone into this sort of stuff.
It's paid off.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to think so. They should all be doing that. Like, it's like when Doku said that him and Haaland have been having a chat about like maybe working out how they should play the ball into the box so it results in more goals. It's like, yes, lads, work at that. Strikers, work on your top tip. Strikers want to score more goals, work on staying on side. I mean, yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, we are now a live-action Viz. Is that Viz style?
Well, yeah, but it was literally just a bit more non-ironic piece of sincere advice.
Yeah. Jack, I want to talk about Phil Foden as well because these two games feel like a true, Phil Foden is here this season. Like performances, don't they?
Yeah, I thought without wanting to be massively contrary, I thought Everton the other week, he's run the game like really, really, really good from a deeper midfield position. He basically made both the goals, even though he didn't get an assist, in the way that he sort of just changed the tempo of the game. And got City going, which I thought was really impressive. And then obviously, Wednesday night, he was took his goals magnificently. He just looks freer and he just looks happier. I mean, it's been quite well documented that last season he was having problems sort of with his mental health and other things and all that sort of stuff. And Tuchel and Guardiola have both sort of said that he needs to get the joy back and sort of start smiling again and whatever, and then his performances will come, and that's exactly what's happened, really. But it's interesting. I kind of don't really know where it's going to end up for Foden, sort of positionally, because I said to Guardiola after the Everton game, was like, have you got a bit of a problem on where you want to play him? Because when he was deeper playing against Everton, he was great because he was knitting everything together. But also, I guess you want him around the box, you want him scoring goals. And he said, like, no, we definitely want him as close to Haaland as possible. But since then, he's been playing in this sort of number eight, kind of David Silvery thing. So I don't know whether Cherky's sort of kind of involvement means that Foden's going to drop back, or whether it's going to be Foden or Cherky most of the time in a sort of kind of a number 10-y close to Haaland. I think there's still quite a few questions about how he's going to deploy him.
Hmm. Either way, it's working, though, at the moment, Higgy, because just on the goals front against Dortmund, Jack said it there, they were both incredibly smooth turns, and then the finishes were fantastic.
Both incredibly similar goals, weren't they? And they're kind of his trademark, exactly how he likes. He's always looking for that, isn't he? He's always looking for that finish, that kind of turn, take a touch, look up, is that shot on, and give it a whack, left foot. Although he didn't need to whack it that much, he used the defenders really well, didn't need to kind of shield it from the keeper, so the keeper's reacting when it's already travelling, which is always to your advantage. But yeah, against Dortmund, I didn't think he played particularly like magnificently. He took his goals well. surprising that they allowed him to do such a typical Phil Foden move twice, but I mean, you've got to take the chance when it comes. I missed the Everton game, unfortunately, so I can't really comment on that because I only saw little bits of highlights. But yeah, it's just, you know, I'm not demanding of him that he's absolutely, you know, carrying the game every time he plays. Just to see him playing well and kind of purring a bit is good enough for now. Mm. You want to see how that continues over a season. Again, going back to being too reactionary, I don't want to be too falls back to his best, and then, you know, if he has three bad games going, he's lost it, he's rubbish, he's get him out of the, you know what I mean? It's like, if
he doesn't need the pressure either. Yeah, just let him play. Yeah,
he's playing well, he's got a smile on his face, that's fine by me. Let's just crack on and carry on, take the pressure off him, let him play his game, and if he carries on playing even to this standard all season, then, you know, we should be going places.
Yeah. Jack, what do you reckon Guardiola makes of Ryan Cherki? Because we've not seen a lot of him so far this season. And then he started against Spurs back at the start of the season because Guardiola was expecting Spurs to play in a low block and they didn't. And that was a bit of a problem. And then he must have known Bournemouth weren't going to play with a low block. He must have known they were going to play higher up. And he selected him and it really worked. And then, you know, he comes on against Dortmund and immediately plays a back heel in his own half, like under pressure. Like if he had hair, Guardiola would be tearing it out at that. So, like, what do you think he makes of it?
The Bournemouth thing was a massive surprise. I think if there was one game you don't play Cherki and Foden together, it was probably Bournemouth, and he did, and then they were both great.
And it worked brilliant, yeah.
I've noticed a few times that when Cherki's given the ball away, he's been a little bit like, Pep's been, oh, what are you doing, mate? Just
not
pass
there,
it.
Not now.
yeah, stop it. I didn't tell you to do that. But that's what you get when you have like Mavericks like that. Like Mavericks don't exist anymore. So it should be sort of applauded that they have signed one and are like happy to play him in a game like the Bournemouth game at the weekend. And they will, Guardiola has reacted to him giving possession away a little bit, but he will know that's the game with him. Kind of fascinated to see how big his role and how big his impact is going to be this year, because obviously, like, attacking players first year under Guardiola at City, like, there are loads of examples of people not really finding their feet until season two, but Cherki has offered some positive signs already, which might buck the trend.
It's interesting saying we don't get Mavericks anymore. You certainly don't get Mavericks in the Pep Guardiola robot teams that have ruined football over the last few years. So yeah, a bit of a contrast.
Does he qualify Higgy as mercurial? Would you say mercurial is a word to describe Ryan Cherki?
Isn't mercurial just now and again flashes of brilliance that are kind of not consistently expected? Because
I'd say Ayo Berkovic was mercurial.
What are we defining mercurial as?
See, that's I don't really know. That's why I was asking.
Right. Well, I my view is that it's kind of you get the odd flash bang, brilliant, and then you know a bit more kind of off the boil for a bit. But Cherki's just been fantastic. Every time he's come on, he's either looked like, you know, creating or scoring, or inevitably has. He's just been amazing. I think he's been, you know, crafted by the aliens and or God and sent to bring us happiness. I absolutely love him with my entire heart. I think he's fantastic.
And the funny thing is, when he spoke to us in America before the Club World Cup started, like his English is all right, but it was like, I can't remember what the question was. Someone asked him about, like, I think United had looked at him when he was younger he was asked about his reaction to the Europa League game at Old Trafford, where, you know, where he, like, cupped his balls and whatever to the...
Oh, he slagged them off, didn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, he just turns around and says, I can't wait for the derby. I want to kill Manchester United. I was like, yeah, you'll do for us, pal. Back page, every paper the next day. I was like, yeah. Superb.
Works for me.
Good copy.
Yeah. Mercurial, according to dictionary.com, of or containing the element mercury. So that's no help, is it?
Well, I hope he recovers, because that's really dangerous stuff.
Yeah. It's actually subject to sudden or unpredictable changes of mood or mind.
Much like this podcast,
indeed. Speaking of which, let's go kicking and screaming into the Liverpool preview. Liverpool up next, so let's begin on that game by hearing how things are going at Anfield right now. I've been speaking to Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap to see where they're up to ahead of their visit to the Etihad, especially as their recent dip in form now appears to be over.
I think there's a few really interesting, valid comparisons to Manchester City across the last few years in amongst all of this. I think a little bit more dramatic in both directions. You know, Liverpool winning the first five without ever playing particularly well. And then losing the next four in quite a dramatic way as well, without playing sort of markedly that much worse, but simultaneously not being convinced and not being convinced of themselves. And a manager who's trying to manage both new players and new approaches and also fitness. So for years, you and I have talked on podcasts, and I've said things like, it's very odd that last season Phil Foden felt like a key part of this side, and at the minute he can't get in the team. And you've said things like, well, you know, this is part of, you know, it's sort of what we see from Pep. And Liverpool, I think, I don't think Arne Slot's quite done that, because I think he's, for instance, picked Alexis McAllister through the teething pains that he's had through this season. And we're at the other side of that now. McAllister's been very good for a half against Aston Villa and very good for 90 minutes against Real Madrid and looked much more like himself. But it is worth saying that, for instance, the manager was desperate to get him back in the team at the start of the season, and it was like playing with a hologram. You can't, you know, it's very difficult to stay the right side of suitably respectful to Liverpool's most important midfielder from January to April in a team that wins the league on the one hand, and actually adequately criticise the performances that he was putting in on the other. And I suspect that Alexis McAllister may well have found himself getting a four-month Pep Guardiola, you are on the bench treatment, where Slot's decision was to play him through. Now, come the end of the season, we will know possibly what was right and what was wrong with that. You know, it may well be that the right approach was to have committed to go in a different direction from the start of the season and look to get the best version of McAllister in January. That might have been.
Was it fitness with him? Because like a lot of City's issues last season was that they had a lot of players injured and everybody else who was fatigued just had to play because there was nobody else to.
So I think it's a combination of fatigue and fitness and possibly something personal. He's had a baby, and there's been a couple of allusions to things going on in his private life. Plus, on top of that, I think that fatigue was a huge part. I think he's a funny player, McAllister, because in general, you know, I think there's some footballers, and we all know them, we've all got them in our teams, who you look at and you go, you are an incredible athlete. On top of all this footballing ability, you are an incredible athlete. And then there's some footballers that you get to see down the years where you're going, you're naturally an unbelievably gifted footballer, but you're not the fittest. And McAllister's quite firmly in camp two, and has had an unbelievably intense 4 years that's involved. We're in the World Cup, we're in the Copa America, being in two title challenges with Liverpool, one of which he's won, and met working for two of the most intense managers in European football history in De Zerbi and Jurgen Klopp. And so McAllister's had this 4 years that leads up to last April. We win the league, he plays that game against Tottenham, scores the goal that puts Liverpool 2-1 up in the match, great goal, and then he does not play again. And there's some sort of noises about surgery, but Slot doesn't give too much away around what's happened with players, doesn't get a pre-season, and then Slot forces him back in at the earliest possible opportunity and just keeps having to sub him, just keeps having to take him off on 55, 60, because it's killing everything. It's killing the performance levels, it's infuriating, and it's difficult to watch, because you're seeing this player who last season looked, you know, as I say, was exceptional second half of the season. Best two midfielders in the country for me in January, February, March and April this year were Alexis McAllister and Moises Caicedo. They were the best two midfielders in the country. Gravenberch was brilliant for us first part of the season, but McAllister second half of the season was just tremendous. And you just see him and he's completely dropped off a cliff. And then within that as well, you've got the, you know, Klopp used to, Andy Robertson's a good example now. You know, Andy Robertson, when he first signed for Liverpool, basically barely plays until the January. Fabinho, who, you know, has 3 years of being an unbelievable midfielder for Liverpool, only gets small appearances, European starts, up until about January as well, the year later. And instead, the manager decides he's desperate to try to get fitness into Alexander Isak because he hasn't had a pre-season, but Isak just doesn't look fit and can't impact games. So that's then ongoing as well. Ekitike gets himself sent off against Southampton, so Isak has to start a game that I think the manager would possibly rather he hadn't have started. But he keeps picking Isak, he keeps picking McAllister, and he's trying to find something in terms of what it is that he's looking to achieve with Florian Wirtz. But the problem with that is that he's just ended up with tons of projects. He's picking the left-back, the new left-back, rather than pick Robertson. So he's got a project at left-back that's got Van Dijk up the wall, because Van Dijk never knows where this fella is and feels like he's got to talk him through every minute of every game. He's trying to sort out replacing Trent, albeit Bradley was there last season, but Bradley gets injured as well at the start of the season. So now he's got a Frimpong, Bradley, Szoboszlai thing going on. He's trying to get McAllister fully fit. That's not quite working at the speed he would like it to. Salah's having a bit of a dip in form. He's trying to sort the Isak thing out. He's now not got two options at left wing, which he did have in Gakpo and Diaz. He's now only got Gakpo. And as I say, there's Florian Wirtz and there's all this money that's been spent. And they're doing all this at once. And I think, you know, listen, Liverpool season is, and also all of this is in the context of Jota. from the first game right the way through. All of it is in the context of Jota.
And I did want to ask about Jota because I was speaking to Nadim Anua not long ago, and one of the things he was saying was about like processing grief as a footballer is like can be quite difficult when like it's personal grief, but when it's a teammate, I don't know how much more magnified that becomes, because I know I know from speaking to other Liverpool fans, there's been discussion about the tribute to Jota on 20 minutes every game, about whether actually that is prohibitive, because it basically says to all of the players on the pitch, you know, like it puts it back and forefront into their mind.
Yep.
And it's something that they're trying to process at the same time.
Yeah, so I think one of the problems with this is that the players will not be homogenous. So what one player likes, another player might not.
Yeah.
So some players who've played with Jota might like the 20 minutes thing, but others might not. We don't know. And also they're not going to come out and tell us. So you've got the 20-minute thing. There's something else about the 20-minute thing in a really basic way, David. I know you've been a goalkeeper. I've played with you. So I know that you played a lot of football. And there's actually something about knowing the time when you play footy. There's times, it sounds like a funny thing to say, but there are times when you get to 20 minutes and you come, and if you knew it was 20 minutes, you'd be like, 20 minutes and we haven't scored. We've battered these. There's times when you get to 20 minutes if you're being battered and you're like, 20 minutes? Christ, we could do with half time here. So, you know, in a really simple way, now obviously scoreboards are everywhere these days, but players can block that out, but you can't block out this. You literally know what time it is. Then you get the song. All the players will have a different response to it, you know, and you've got to bear that in mind. In the same way that they still keep, at least for the home games, I'm not too sure about the away, but they're still keeping his part of the dressing room as his part of the dressing room. But one or two of them might not like that. I don't know which one or two, but one or two might not like that. But it might be that that's the feeling that the majority would like that to be the case. And, you know, I don't know. There's no right or wrong here. And we've got to sort of be respectful. So the manager's trying to deal with all of this that I've talked about, everything on the football side. And then there's this other thing as well in the background that is just constant and is just present within the club and difficult to address. As I say, none of those players and that manager does not want and would never use what's gone on with Jota as an excuse for Liverpool's poor form, not least because what you say when Liverpool's poor form ceases to be poor form and Liverpool play well, like they've done the last couple of games. Oh, now it's an inspiration. The world doesn't work like that. These are also elite athletes. The one thing you don't want to ever do is give them an excuse. You know, the Liverpool's job this season is to look like a football team that can get the other side of 90 points and at the very least get to a semi-final of the Champions League. That's the job. And no one came out in the summer and said, we're downgrading that job. So we've got to still take them, take them at the word, as it were, around that, and take Arne Slotter's word around that. But it will play a part. But I think that the other matters are also playing a part that I've just described. And as I say, we talk a lot about Guardiola, we've talked about Klopp, we talk about a lot of managers and the decisions that they make. And maybe we're seeing at times why they do make one or two of those decisions. Maybe we're seeing why, you know, as I say, I think Guardiola may well have made the decision, looked at someone like Alexis McAllister and gone, I'm just not going to worry about you until December. He may have looked at something like the Isak situation and gone, we're going to do without you until the second half of the season and we're just going to build you up really slowly. We've seen in the past Klopp with new signings, I'll keep saying it, but it's not just Klopp, there are other managers as well. Kevin, for instance, at Fulham at the minute, he only got his first start the other week from Marco Silva. You know, I'm sure if you're a Fulham supporter, you're thinking, why on earth isn't this fella playing our record sign and who's this tricky winger I'm dead excited about? But he chose not to for this long. You know, we're now in November and that's when he's picked him for the first time. So managers make these decisions, and because slots feel a little bit more maybe conventional, we don't therefore view them as decisions. Well, it's the default thing to do. Of course you pick the fella who you've paid nine figures for, who plays up front. Of course you try and get him fit. But maybe there is an argument to do the opposite, and possibly, and this is where, you know, we're not going to know until the end of the season, but possibly, just possibly, this has cost Liverpool some points. And possibly, just possibly, at the end of the season, you know, when Slot looks back and thinks, because he's still a young manager, Slot. It's worth saying Slot hadn't managed a team when Jurgen Klopp takes over Liverpool. Like, he hadn't done a day's management when Jurgen Klopp takes over Liverpool. So it may well be that at the end of the season, Slot looks back on it and says, I wish I'd done that differently. Maybe he won't, and we don't know.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Is it a case of... there's been a lot of upheaval in the squad anyway this summer. I mean, the headline is that Liverpool spent a lot of money in the summer to bring in a lot of quality players. And I certainly, when I think back to my position on where the three what I perceived title challenges were for the start of the season, I was really really worried about Liverpool more so than Arsenal, given the strengthening that I thought you'd gone through. But in that same sense, you have brought in a lot of quality players. But is it now disjointed because of that? It's not necessarily, I hate the phrase Slot doesn't know his best system, because what's the best system for whatever game? It's more a case of, like, there's just so many people who are learning new things in the Liverpool kind of style of play.
I think there's an element of that, but I think it's also simultaneously worth saying that a lot of players have left. So it's not as simple as, I think if you look at it from Arsenal's point of view, there is the recurring thing that Arsenal are actively bad at selling players, that Arsenal's records sale still remains Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to Liverpool. But the flip side of that is that this season, whilst Arsenal have also spent money and added players, they actually didn't lose that many. They lose Partey, and that's a very complicated question. They get a new second choice goalkeeper, so I presume they lose the previous second choice goalkeeper. It looks a little...
It's generally quite stable.
Or you can choose for it to be stable. But Liverpool have lost Diaz, Liverpool have lost Nunez, Liverpool have lost Jota. That's three of the front five from last season, of the five forwards from last season. Three of them are not available for selection from Liverpool's point of view. There's continuity in midfield, but as I've just said, there's been a big issue with McAllister so far over the course of the campaign. And also, Szoboszlai's had to go and play games at right back. The first choice right back's gone. There was a desire to phase Andy Robertson out, and I would perhaps argue that's the one where now I think the manager looks like he's got himself a little bit too carried away and gone too early, too soon on Kerkez. That's arguably the one where I think it's the nearest to a bit of a cut and dried thing. But all of that said, Kerkez is on the pitch when we go to Newcastle and win. Kerkez is good and on the pitch when we beat Arsenal. Kerkez plays well in the Merseyside derby, so even that's not quite as straightforward, but it is worth saying that I think part of why in forward move and play, Liverpool have improved last couple of games. It's the selection of Andy Robertson has made a big difference. But those options have disappeared for the manager. And that, I think, is as much the problem as the idea of sort of trying to integrate the new. And then I think within that, he does have an idea, I think, of what it is that it's going to be once Salah goes. I think Salah's more of a moving part than Van Dijk. Centre-backs are centre-backs. However good Van Dijk is, centre-backs are centre-backs. Whereas Salah just skews the way you attack. And last season, the way Salah skewed the way Liverpool attacked is a key reason why Liverpool won the league. It's not an argument to say that Salah, whilst he's looked much more himself in the last two matches, Salah has had an extended period this season where he's been everyone likes to do the thing where they go by his standards. No, by anyone's
by anyone's standards.
By Jacob Murphy's standards, Mo Salah has had four or five poor games this season. And, again, this is so hard to talk about because at the end of the first game of the season against Bournemouth, he's on his own on the pitch crying his eyes out. Literally, that happens. And you're like, Jesus, not least because we sort of view Salah as almost like this ineffable force of football. So to see him in that sort of situation, you're like, God, what's gone on here? You know, well, we know what's gone on, but my God, you know what? What does this tell us? So there can be that reason for that. But also, frankly, every now and again through his Liverpool career, more often than not in the second half of the season, but every now and again, Salah's thrown in 6 weeks of not being very good. It happens to everyone. You know, I suspect where I able to go back and do a full analysis and watch every game Kenny Dalglish ever played for Liverpool, I'll find two or three batches of 6 weeks where Kenny wasn't at his best. You know,
just a bit shit. Yeah.
But it happens. So I think again, working out, is that the new system? Is that the new players? You know, is that the relationship with the forwards? I think that there is something in. Is it moving to Szoboszlai? Nunez and Szoboszlai last season did loads of work for Salah. And this season, Szoboszlai's been moved and Nunez isn't there. And I think in the early part of last season, you know, Nunez was important in terms of what it was that he gave Salah, which is not a fashionable thing to say. But there's a reason why in the summer, for instance, and this is even before, I think, the Jota stuff or around the time of it, when, you know, Salah, in this weird way in which he's become a more engaged human on matters, comes out and, like, as a go at a fan account that was celebrating all of Liverpool's new signings and comes out and says, no, but what about the lad, the way you've talked about the lads who've left? It's not acceptable. Like, you know, they acted as though there was a massive upgrade and Salah's position was, I don't think there is. But also those lads are the champions, so grow up. You know, all very team Mo Salah on that. But it's probably a reasonable conclusion to say that, for instance, Nunez's time at Liverpool needed to come to an end and Diaz wanted to move on because Liverpool weren't prepared to give him the sort of contract that he's undoubtedly gone and got for himself at Bayern Munich. So, you know, what this stuff is, it does happen. As it is, though, in the now, you know, Liverpool are good against Aston Villa, but more importantly, like, look like an adult football team than actually being good.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I saw comparisons with the way that City dropped off the cliff last season, and I kind of feel like if that was true for Liverpool, you wouldn't have beaten Aston Villa.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. You know, I think that we end up in this situation where I think that they had enough in them to do that. Listen, Morgan Rodgers hits the post after 5 minutes, and if Morgan Rodgers doesn't hit the post after 5 minutes, then I think we would have ended up finding ourselves, you know, if that sneaks into the corner, then I think we could have found ourselves in a bit of trouble. It doesn't, though. It hits the post, and it's worth saying, you know, in these games where Liverpool haven't got results, the Galatasaray one, they concede to the second shot, which is a contentious penalty, and the others, they all concede with the first shot. So the first shot, the first shot the opposition has been going in the back of the net. So Rodgers would have been another example of the same thing. That said, Liverpool just grow through the game. They have an Aston Villa-based plan. I think Villa are dead funny. They're dead interesting because whenever Villa are going to play Arsenal or City, I think Villa can get something there. And when we're playing Villa, I think we're going to batter these. So yeah, you're just in the situation where you think, yeah, we'll be, you know, it'll be fine. And then, truthfully, you know, Morgan Rodgers could have scored. It could have been all very different. It could have been another one, 25-yarder, goes into the bottom corner. We all feel sorry for ourselves. But that doesn't happen. And you watch them grow through the game. And what's brilliant, someone said it to me on one of our shows last night, is you feel like they grew through the Villa game. I was made up. It was 2-0. Like, if it had ended up being 4, I'd have been a bit pissed off, which I know sounds ludicrous. But my attitude to
That paper's over more cracks, doesn't it? Yeah.
But also it means that they've had to defend a 2-0. You know, they've had to go into the end of the match dealing with the fact that it's a 2-0. And they've had to show the positive attitude that you need to show to get out with a 2-0. And they've managed to do that as a group. So I'm quite, you know, I was really pleased by that. But they grew through that game and it felt as though the growing continued into the one against Real Madrid. You know, and that is, it's the best part of it, is that I think in practically every phase of the game against Real Madrid, including extended periods where they didn't have the ball and Real Madrid did in the Liverpool half, it felt like Liverpool had a plan, they had a focus, they had a certainty. And I think a lot of that stems from, you know, it goes back to the continuity in midfield from last season into this. Wirtz has taken part in the Real Madrid game, so I don't think it's as simple as, well, Wirtz can't be part of this. That's a ridiculous position. It's just not true. But I think Robertson made a big difference.
And Neil, it feels typically like you've run right back into form just at the point of which you're coming to the Etihad. And it's like at the one point I thought, we might get a nice game against Liverpool where I don't have to stress too much. And yet here we are, you're back in form for it. So are we going to get another titanic battle between these two? And what's your score prediction for the charity bet later on?
I think we might get a titanic battle. Yeah, I think I still think it's still the game I most look forward to on the domestic calendar is playing Manchester City, you know, because I just think that City can't not engage. You know, I'm not going to quite say that, you know, City can be clever and City can, you know, they can pick the battles, but I just don't think Guardiola's got it in him to come up against a football and challenge and not go, let's do this. Let's have a go and let's see where we end up. I just don't think he'll ever be that man to decide that discretion is the better part of valor. You know, I think even the Arsenal away game this season, what I thought was interesting was, yes, City do cover up and play conservatively, but they do it when they find themselves, 1-0 up. I think that where we end up here is, I think that it will be a good game. I think that both sides will go for it. I don't think Liverpool will make that many changes from the other night. I think if you give asking me to do the charity bet in the interest of the charity, I will go with Manchester City 1, Liverpool 1. I would point out that last season was Liverpool's first win at the Etihad since 2018. So it is worth remembering that, and that was in the European match. But I think that this season, I think Manchester City 1, Liverpool 1 feels likely. It would not surprise me, though, if that's the scoreline and Liverpool have scored the first goal.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Higgy, Liverpool at... Liverpool at Anfield is one thing. Liverpool at the Etihad has been actually quite a good game for City in recent years.
Klaxon.
Yeah, I know. But, like, this should be a fascinating one with where the two teams are at so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Liverpool Real game and they were worth the win there, although Madrid were pretty drab. I guess you could say they were nullified by Liverpool, so that's that. But yeah, City are in, you know, banging good form, should be really confident. But yeah, if Liverpool come out of a bit of a slump, you wouldn't want a better springboard into any game than beating Real Madrid, I would guess. So it is set up for a bit of a fascinating tussle, David.
Yeah. Jack, how important is this game in the course of the season? Because, like, we talked about it only being November, you can't talk about must wins and all that sort of stuff. There's so many points still to play for. But the way the table's shaped up, City 6 points behind Arsenal, Liverpool 7 points behind Arsenal. And that's 1 point behind City, you're right. Arsenal play newly promoted but still fourth placed Sunderland. They don't want to let Arsenal get too far ahead, but it feels like one of these teams is going to end up in that position this weekend.
I mean, kind of what we were saying before about the table. Like, if there were 9 points behind Arsenal in November, not ideal, but not insurmountable. Like Arsenal, we still don't know how Arsenal are going to react to presumably being the front runners come January, February. Like, is it going to be the same as it's always been? Like, there's no actual hard evidence to suggest that it's not just going to be the same.
But it also
It feels different, but that doesn't mean it's going to be different.
Yeah, but it also needs, if they are going to be put under pressure, it needs someone to put them under pressure. And if City and Liverpool remain a distance behind, then it doesn't matter if they don't hit top form after January, because they can still kind of, I'm going to use a kind of a gaming term, save scum the way to the title just by getting through games.
I don't understand that.
Save scum. Where you save before an important bit and then...
Oh, save.
Yeah, save.
Oh, I think you said save scum.
I did.
Right. Yeah, save scum. You basically save the game, then play the bit, and if it doesn't work out, you just go back to the save.
Well, why is the scum bit in there?
Because it's not playing the game in its true fashion, is it?
Yeah, but that's cheating.
Yeah.
You're suggesting that someone has to cheat.
No. I'm suggesting that if there's no pressure being put on them, then they don't need to worry about what's happened behind them.
No, I think you just wanted to drop that little bit of gaming lingo and you found your...
I mean, I'll be honest, it's probably not making the edit. So
let's... Oh, come on. We'll keep this.
Save something. Edit scum.
Yeah. I don't know where we are or what day it is or what question I was answering.
It's nearly a day after you started to try to join the podcast. Given the technical difficulties earlier.
I mean, I have apologised profusely.
Just
as an aside, what you haven't mentioned is that Liverpool is Guardiola's 1,000th game in management, which I think is a phenomenal achievement. Like, pretty much non-stop for 18 years. Is like mad, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And quite poetic that it's coming against Liverpool.
How did you know that I wasn't going to bring that up later on?
Because I have studiously read your notes.
That doesn't sound like you.
Were you going to bring that up later on?
Must be a fast reader. You didn't read him at the start of that.
I wasn't going to bring it up later on as it happens, though. But I mean, the audience didn't know that. While we're doing the mad stuff, Higgy, did you see the reaction from Arsenal fans this week about the BBC posting a Premier League table that showed what it would look like without set piece goals? City were basically top because they haven't scored a set piece yet this season. Arsenal were down in fifth. And then all the reaction was kind of like, can we have a table without Haaland's goals? Because City are just as reliant on Haaland as we are on set pieces. And I'm like, they are just illustrating a point, lads. It's just like, the point is you score a lot of set pieces. That's it. It's not a criticism.
I've not seen it, no, because I try to avoid Arsenal fans, particularly online. We're talking about reactionary head loss. They're just the worst in existence for that. I saw a lot of pictures of them reading newspapers, like very demonstrable, fucking off the cuff wit there from them. Like, wow, ha ha ha, lads, ha 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 ha, Hertfordshire.
And it wasn't, and the papers weren't even in English, so they can't have been reading them, can they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know we were doing one of those podcasts. All right.
The that. While funny, is not the best ever made up table, though, is it? The best ever made up table is
long range goals.
Is if long range goals counted double, then yeah. Liverpool the top.
I didn't know that.
Was that ESPN? I think it was.
I don't know that, but it's funny that you've mentioned that because it's a little bit of a satire.
It's time for a game of Would City or Arsenal be higher in the Premier League table if this one specific condition were met?
There we go.
Wow.
I've got some league tables based on how different things are valued. And you're not playing against each other. You can work together on this one. It's just a bit of fun. So if all games were decided by golden goal, would City or Arsenal be higher up in the table?
I don't know, because I haven't been any.
Well, no, it'd just golden be the first goal. Yeah, the first goal of the game wins it. So if that was the case, then who would be higher in the table?
I think City.
Happy with that, Higgy?
Yeah.
It is City. City had have won 8, lost 2. Arsenal would have won 7, lost 3. 3 points between them. So how about if headers didn't count? Who would be higher up?
Oh, I suspect they've scored more headers just because they've got more set pieces. Forgotten the way you worded the question. No idea what the answer is. What was the question?
Yeah, would City or Arsenal be higher in the table if headers didn't count?
Feels like a slight double negative, that.
Yeah, it's very complex. Am I being dim?
If all headed goals this season complex. Did not count, what, who Higgy, would be higher in the table?
Higgy's basically saying City would be higher in the table. I wonder whether this is a trick question, almost.
I've not given an answer, have I? You two keep saying things that I've said that I've not said.
Well, no, you said that Arsenal have scored more headed goals. So, yeah, that's what you said, right?
I suppose I did say that, yeah.
Yeah, so therefore, the answer that you were offering was that City will be higher.
Okay.
I'm happy to stick with that.
Happen with City being higher, your City would be higher if headers didn't count. But they would be higher on goals scored. City would have won 6, drawn 1, lost 3. Arsenal would have won 5, drawn 4, lost 1. Both on 19 points, but City would have scored 18 goals. There we go.
You know, I've managed to shift to the BBC this week, mate.
No, I've had a quiet week, so I've had a lot of time on my hands. Does it show? who would be higher in the table if games ended at half time?
That's definitely got to be City. Surely.
Yeah, Arsenal king of the late goals, aren't it? I would agree.
It would actually be Arsenal top of the table. That one would be on goal difference, plus 6 over City's plus 4. Both have entirely the same record. 1-6, drawn 2, lost 2. 3 more of these to go. If away goals were worth 2 instead of 1, yes.
3.
We've already had, 19 of these 3? Now?
If away goals were worth 2 goals instead of 1, who would be higher in the table?
What was that? I'm not.
But how many of them were long range?
It doesn't matter.
How many just away goals?
Every time the team that was away from home scored, if that goal counted for 2 goals, who would be higher in the table, City or Arsenal?
Arsenal.
Yeah, it would be Arsenal by 2 points. This is one for you, Jack. If goals in stoppage time of either half didn't count, who would be higher in the table?
City.
No, it's Arsenal again. Finally, if goals inside the 6-yard box didn't count, who would be higher in the table, City or Arsenal?
Didn't count.
Liverpool.
I didn't check Liverpool's games. I didn't have that much time on my hands, mate.
Didn't count. Arsenal. No, City.
It's City, yeah. City would have won 6, drawn 1, lost 3. Arsenal would have won 5, drawn 4, lost 1. Both on 19 points. Goals scored, again, would put City top. There you go.
That's what I thought.
Exactly.
That's what went through my head.
Exactly.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. And we're very sorry about that.
Wowee.
Well, I enjoyed it. I did the research, so I thought I may as well use it.
I don't have to do any exercise now. My heart rate's right up.
good. Jack, let's talk about some specific players for the Liverpool game. Because when you look at the defence, Nico O'Reilly's played a lot lately. Deservedly so as well. He's getting into great positions from fullback. He's been a goal threat, all that sort of stuff. The question is, does he have to continue there at the moment? Or is there a balance to be struck with Ryan Aitnori, with Guardiola stepping out there, with the number of games that City are going to play this season? Is it a case of the shirt's O'Reilly's and it's his to keep right now?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'd just carry on with O'Reilly. And it's his shirt until he makes a mistake. I think defensively he's better than Aitnori. And I don't think you lose much, if anything, going forward when O'Reilly plays. Mm. I think he's a more complete left back than Ait Nouri.
He's an absolute unit as well. Have you seen him? His legs are like.
I think defensively he's improved massively over the last few months. And then someone at the club said to me the other week, so, well, you know, he looks like a left back, and then he'll do something in a game where you go, oh yeah, no, I forget that, like, he's an attacking midfielder. Like, he'll knock it through someone's legs on halfway or whatever, and then gallop forward.
Do that little pirouette thing on the touchline. Yeah.
Looks like a left back, as in the way he plays.
Yeah, as in, like, he looks at home there, and we were talking about the England squad the other day. Like, the left backs that they're choosing at the moment aren't really a patch on Nico O'Reilly. Like, it's Jed Spence and players like that. So there's a real opportunity for him. But I just think O'Reilly's just sort of, he looks like he's got it all to me. Mm. So I think he'll have a decent run at the World Cup.
He's doing that thing as well that Guardiola loves, of getting into positions in the final third when City have possession. And you look at his goal against Bournemouth, he like basically saw the space and attacked it. And look at the Haaland header. Foden played him in, didn't he, down the line? And it was a case of he saw the space, he went for it.
That's in his makeup, isn't it? Yeah, he's great at getting forward. Is he number 10 naturally? Is that how he's kind of been brought up at City?
Yeah, so he started.
I mean, Pep loves that, doesn't he?
When he was much, much younger, he started as a left sided sort of, well, not a full back because it was seven a side, but sort of played on the left hand side, slightly more defensively, and then got moved to play as a number 10, then played as a striker for a season, then got moved back to playing as a defensive midfielder, and that's that when he went to go and train with the first team. I think he was a number 8. And then when the first team got hold of him, he sort of moved back towards being like a number 6.
You kind of lost me now. Defensive midfielder, I was with you. But
he's morphed into a left back. So he's pretty much played everywhere for City.
I mean, if you're a good midfielder, you can play anywhere anyway, can't you? That's why Pep loves him so much, probably.
Mm. Guardiola also switched up the centre-backs for Dortmund, Higgy, bringing in Stones for Diaz. What do you think he'll do against Liverpool? Because Isak coming back from injury may be involved, may not be involved. Ekitike could pose a real threat, like might want the physicality of Diaz in there. But, I mean, just like John Stones in the centre of City's defence.
Yeah, we play, you know, if John Stones is playing well, we tend to play well. He's good defensively. He's good going forward. He gives you an extra option. Adds an extra dynamic to the team. So you'd hope that Stones would be involved. But you don't. There's no point in me trying to second guess Pep. He'll probably pick Savinho. I don't know. Although, you know, Savinho played. He was in danger of playing really well against Dortmund, wasn't he? spat with the linesman aside. That was a bit weird. You see that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he got booked for that, didn't he?
Well, rightly so.
Or he got booked for his protestations about that, yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know what's going on in his head.
There was an Atletico Mineiro fan there watching him the other night, which, like, why would you go? He went draped in the club's flag. Why would you do that?
Cold?
No. It was bloody warm, actually, Wednesday.
I'm not if you're from Mineiro.
18. Mm. I was sat two seats down from someone who was wearing a snood and had an electric blanket with them.
Wasn't that cold? It was nowhere near that cold.
I wish it was cold. You know, it's raining. You put a raincoat on, walk to work, absolutely drenched in sweat. It's ridiculous. Make winters cold again.
Yeah, that's what I say. I can't believe we're doing anything but discuss the football, which I suppose is one of the...
The problem with discussing the football this week, right? So I'm just looking at your sort of list here. Foden, really good. Nico O'Reilly, really good. We're going to talk about Nico Gonzalez, been really good.
Really good, yeah.
Oh, Haaland's really good.
Yeah, very, very... If anything, too good.
Yeah.
So Doku? I mean, Jack, do you not want me to ask you about Nico Gonzalez then? Or?
He's really good, mate.
Is anyone out there still saying he isn't really good? Because that was an issue for me. He's been really good. People still saying he's not really good. Are they really still saying that? I don't think they are. Naysayers on Nico
Gonzalez. That's what you're saying before, like the kind of instant reaction on things, isn't it? Like he's just not played enough for people to sort of make form an opinion either way up until the last sort of 6 weeks where he's actually had a proper run of games. And like they really missed him at Villa, didn't they, last week?
Yeah. Mm. In fact, we looked so much better when he came on. Was that tactical? Yeah.
I think it was injury related, wasn't
it? No, he'd had a knock in midweek at Villarreal. But yeah, he's been one of the stories of the season so far, really.
Yeah, the way he gets out of tight spaces with the ball and then finds a man is starting to become really a consistent feature of his play, and it's something to behold because not a lot of people can do that like that, and he's really good at it.
Yeah. What does it mean, Jack, if Rodri isn't available for Liverpool then? Is there a concern, or is it basically there are now no concerns that Nico is the centre-back?
To be honest with you, I think if Rodri said he was fit to start, I think he'd still play Gonzalez on Sunday.
Mm.
Because like Rodri's not match fit. And he's not, you know, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen between now and Sunday that's going to make him match fit. So I would play Gonzalez either way. Because he's done absolutely nothing wrong, and like you look at the goals in the first half against Bournemouth at the weekend, like he's a key part of both of them, early doors and the build up and stuff, playing through the lines and things like that. So, yeah, I just keep going with him.
Yeah. Okay then. Well, that's where we'll see how it goes, because sadly, no more wins on the last show on the charity bet. We're really struggling for form this season. We've had one successful prediction, meaning that we're on £75 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They'll be collecting outside the Etihad again on Sunday, so please go along with the donation if you can. They're collecting non-perishable food for Manchester Central Food Bank, and through them, City fans are the food bank's biggest regular donor. We're going to try and boost the kitty for them now. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles, and we've got 3 predictions on the Liverpool game coming up. We heard from Neil that he's gone for a 1-1 draw. That is 6-1 and £60 if he's right. Jack, where are you going with this one?
2-1 win.
2-1 win for City is 7-1 and £70 if you're right. Higgy, over to you, mate.
City-Liverpool, I've gone Manchester City 3, Liverpool 1. And I also predicted that for Bournemouth, which is, you know, a shame, really, that nobody...
Yeah, you weren't on the podcast that week, were you? So, didn't work. 12-1, if you're right. £120. So, fingers crossed for you. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. We will finish with a couple of quick listener questions. BlueSky@BloomingPodcast.com. Email contact@BloomingPodcast.com as well. And although I forgot to do it this week, we do normally put an Instagram story up. So, just search for Blue Moon Podcast. You can ask your questions through there. Nevertheless, Dan did get in touch on Instagram to say, in the season of the set piece, should we be concerned that City's set pieces are awful? Despite being crap at corners and free kicks, City are still the Premier League leading scorers. Higgy, there is a sense, isn't there, that a corner is given and the Etihad just goes, well, nothing's going to come of this.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Like, we have actually got a set piece coach, so what are they doing? No, I don't get it. There's actually, to be fair, there were a couple of corners against Bournemouth where, as if I remember correctly, whipped it into the near post. Haaland started far, ran into the near post, flicked it across. But unfortunately, Erling Haaland wasn't there to to nod it in, which may be the flaw in that plan. But hey, it looked fairly promising for a time. So there is... perhaps a bit of progress being made. But yeah, it's a bit weird that we're so like devoid of any solid recipes for success on that front. It is a bit of a concern. Totally agree.
There's a flip side to that as well, isn't there? Like the Matty Cash goal at Villa was the first goal they've conceded from a set piece all season.
Maybe that's what he's doing.
Like, so it's just like there's just nothing going on at set pieces in City games at all.
Maybe he's just been set piece defence coaching.
The ultra contrarian in that, as everyone else leans into set pieces, Guardiola's going, no. Yeah.
Maybe that's quite sensible, though, really. If everyone else is learning how to score from them, let's learn how to not concede from them. Could do both, but...
Yeah. And finally, Raymond has been in touch on Blue Sky to say, after Foden's selfie, let's hear your best City goal celebrations, please. Jack, I'll let you sit and stew for a second because I am conscious that you don't have the back catalogue of City nostalgia that me and Higgy do.
I can stew all you want, mate. I'm not going to have an answer.
Yeah. Higgy, I mean, aside from Adebayor against Arsenal, have we got anything else?
Oh, what was Dave Silva's goal celebration like against Blackpool that time, Jack?
Come on, what are you doing?
Left it late.
We managed to get through an episode before it was mentioned as well.
Sorry about that. I'm not sorry at all. Goal celebrations. Yeah, I mean, personally, in terms of like that appeal to myself, I always used to try and emulate the Gary Flitcroft kind of understated, just raise the arm with a little bit of a twirl of the index finger, quite casual, as if, yeah, that's all you're getting. I know it was good. Next kind of approach. Yeah. In terms of iconic celebrations, you can't really look too far past Dick Off at Wembley.
Good old-fashioned knee slide, yeah.
Yeah. Ireland taking his shorts down to reveal his super duds. Benjani. And you, and all of you with his little gesture at Old Trafford. But my favourite one is the one that sort of burned into my memory bank is Paul Lake holding up Ian Bishop after the diving header at the 5-1, back when that's kind of all we had. Amazing kit and just the joy on everyone's faces and everyone watching.
Yeah, we've not done your cult hero episode yet on Paolo Onechop, but do you remember when he screamed into the microphone at Southampton?
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get an FA charge for that probably these days.
Probably would, yeah.
Yeah. Jack, any spring to mind? I'm gonna, like, any Blackpool ones that spring to mind? I don't know if there's been iconic Blackpool celebrations.
I don't know whether there's been any iconic Blackpool celebrations. It's fucking settled down. I'm not very good at it's actually bookended the podcast in me not being very good at stuff and like don't approach people for pictures and not very good at remembering stuff. Celebrations. I genuinely can't think of any. I mean, we haven't scored nearly as many goals as Man City over the last 30, 40 years. So maybe there's something in that.
Well, that's an answer as well.
Mainly, basically, the major goals that have been scored for us over the years have led to the goal scorer running over to the bench, really.
Yeah.
Or a striker, like, wheeling away like Shearer.
And then just getting mobbed, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, like, Richie Wellens from the halfway line went to the bench. Charlie Adams' free kick at Wembley in the playoff final ran to the bench. Brett Ulmrod in the same game ran to the bench, I think.
Maybe they just like the bench.
Yeah. Maybe they want to be on the bench. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, sorry. That's a terrible end to the episode.
To the podcast. Yeah. Well, that's unfortunately, that's where we're going to leave it. So, sorry, everyone. That's the end of this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much to my guest, Jack Gaunt.
Thank you, mate.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Thanks for having me.
There is a clip of the most recent Nostalgia episode coming up shortly. That was City fan Adam Monk inducting Samir Nasri into our Cult Hero Hall of Fame. The full thing is available now for Patreon members. Head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com for more information on signing up. And we've also got Christmas coming up soon. So if you're looking for a present for a City fan in your life, then you could also buy them a year's subscription to the Patreon. They'll get this show ad-free, plus the Nostalgia episodes every Monday. For more information on how to do that, head over to gift.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week to discuss whatever happens against Liverpool. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
So I couldn't believe what I'd just seen, and I'd still not had the come down from that goal by the time Nasri did what he then did.
Just belts it in, yeah.
So it was a cross from Kolarov, wasn't it? And I think it was intended to reach Aguero, but it didn't. Yeah. And he might have flicked it, and it didn't roll, it bounced to the edge of the box. what I loved so much about that Nasri goal, it was almost like karate. Like, both his feet were off the ground when he hit it. He jumped in the air, and then it was an outside, almost Di Canio-esque kind of outside the boot finish. And it's that angle, isn't it? You know the one where it's behind the goal, and you see the ball set outside the post, and it just nestles in.
You know what it does that I love? It hits the inside of the post and then rolls along the inside, the side netting. Like, and that's it's so aesthetically pleasing. It's Mannonian goal for Sunderland.
Yeah,
and he just stands and watches it. You can't do anything about it.
No, you can't. It was hit with power, precision, everything, and the celebration as well. Just arms outstretched, Wembley. First time we'd won the League Cup post takeover as well. So it was like another big moment for the club. That is my favourite Nasri goal, and I think it's probably most City fans' favourite Nasri goal.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.